Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Talk of the Street, an unofficial Coronation Street catch-up podcast that has suddenly taken an unnaturally obsessive interest in the product range of the Commando Lock Company based in Troy, Michigan. They might not have been around since the 19th century, but they meet US military standards, and damn, those are some fine-looking padlocks. I'm Gavin.
And I'm a penguin.
You're what?
Well, I'm not a penguin yet, but I'll be a penguin tomorrow.
Are you feeling okay?
I have the Christmas parade tomorrow. I'll be dressed as a penguin walking down Main Street. Aren't you proud?
For Amit's an unusual definition of proud. And I'm just kidding about the Commando Lock Company. I'll always be a Squire fanboy.
No, you won't.
No. It was nice while it lasted, though.
It was nice.
It always kind of felt to me like it was a joke that'd gone too far.
On their end, yeah.
Yeah, or a kind of careful what you wish for type thing.
Right. Like somebody who wasn't authorized to okay this.
Oh, no, I don't think that. I think they had some money left over in their budget. They needed to get rid of it. They got rid of a small portion of it. And that was it.
Oh.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
You are now free agents. Have you heard from MeUndies recently?
No, but I haven't added them lately on the Twitter.
We need to think about who we want to sponsor us next.
I think we should get LaCroix, because I mention them every single podcast, because I drink them every single podcast.
LaCroix, Lafroig, other things that begin with La. The sport of lacrosse.
Yeah. Los Angeles.
Yes. What an incredible week in terms of downloads, though. Last week's episode was downloaded more than 6 times more than is typical, and it's already the most downloaded episode we've ever done, and I have absolutely no idea why. It wasn't as if Corey was spectacular the other week, or our show for that matter, and I can't find any links or anything trending anywhere.
And I kind of feel like last week we were both kind of off of our game because we were both sick, and I kept drifting off.
Yeah, which I've edited out quite professionally, I have to say. It makes me wonder what drives people to it in the first place, because it's probably not prior weeks, and it's not the success of that week, because you don't know how good the episode is until you listen to it. So, I don't know. I'm completely confused. If you are one of the batch of new listeners, drop us a line and let us know what tipped you off. We're thetalkofthestreet@gmail.com or at Corey Podcast on Twitter and Facebook.
Seriously, please do it, or else he's just going to be like
this.
He's
just going to obsess over this.
He's just going to be like this over and over and over again.
Now, you haven't had a chance to watch Friday's episodes.
I did not, because I was busy building a Christmas parade float.
So a third of this is going to come as a surprise. Well, I say surprise.
Yeah.
To you.
I have a feeling I'm not going to be happy about any of it.
I'm going to lie about one thing that happened on Friday. Why don't you see if you can spot what I lie about? Shall we preamble, my dear?
Please.
Our mailbag. Susan wrote on Facebook, it's going from bad to worse. Short and to the point, Susan. Thank you very much for taking the time to pick out those bon mots.
She's not wrong, though.
No, she's not wrong. Canadian Helen decided to cheer everyone up with some pictures of a Coronation Street book she'd managed to pick up from a big box store in Canada. Canada, it really does have the loveliest things. Thank you, Helen. Hindsight Corner has taken a week off and is sunning itself on the beaches of the Cayman Islands because we got nothing wrong last week. Or more accurately, I didn't pick up on anything that we did get wrong. Do you still want to do the blue, blue, blue thing anyway?
I didn't ask you about anything last week.
No.
I wasn't confused about anything.
I'm not saying you weren't confused about anything, but you didn't ask me about anything.
That shows just how off my game I was. No.
You don't want to do it. Okay.
No.
Our Twitter follower count remains stable and steady at 32.
Nobody from the show liked any of our tweets this week. And
did you tweet anything?
No.
I don't think I tweeted anything.
No. And have you tweeted from the Talk of the Street Twitter handle at all?
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
What do you think I was talking about?
Just yourself, because when I tweet from myself.
Oh.
Because you are the master and commander of the Talk of the Street Twitter handle.
Yes, I am lord of those 32 people.
Yes.
What you drinking?
I'm drinking a lovely Malbec. that you picked up for me, which has a big iron number one bolted to the bottle. I drank Malbec in honor of Carla, who we really didn't see very much of this week.
I don't think we saw her at all.
No. Well, I was just, I framed it the way I did because I don't know if she showed up on Friday.
Oh, I've just spoiled that for you because she doesn't.
Oh.
What am I lying?
I'm also drinking my Key Lime LaCroix, which I always drink every week. And they should really just, you know, start sending them to me because I talk about them all the time.
Or money. Money works.
Money works too, yes. But if they sent it to us, then you wouldn't have to buy it for me all the time. What you drinking?
Coors Light, Jack Daniels, Sprite Zero.
Is there Sprite Zero with your Jack Daniels in the glass? You're drinking it from a lovely Knob Creek glass this week.
Hmm.
Hmm. Where did we get that from? Did we get that when we were in Kentucky?
Yeah.
Huh.
Did we go? I can't remember going to Knob Creek.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't remember having gone. Oh, no, it was a Christmas present. It was a
Christmas present.
Yeah. This is all very fascinating stuff.
Not even close. Shall we dive in?
Please.
Our first story tonight is about Sally and Tim and Gina.
Ugh.
Abby's brushing her teeth in the morning, trying to boost Sally's confidence.
She's
not by brushing her teeth. She's not brushing her teeth to make Sally confident.
No.
She's brushing her teeth and then she's trying to make Sally confident.
Right. And there's no water or toothpaste on that toothbrush.
No.
It's dry. She's brushing her teeth dry.
She's worried about people finding out about her scam, Sally that is. On the basis of nothing whatsoever, Abby reckons it'll be fine. Sophie's at home on the phone to Paula. She's been trying to get hold of her several times and Gina wouldn't be surprised if Paula doesn't want anything more to do with Sally after all this lying. And then Paula arrives in court just in the nick of time. She berates Sally quietly, then asks the... it's not the judge that she's speaking to, it's the court clerk, I think, for a delay to take instruction.
Court clerk?
Clerk.
Clerk, okay.
Clerk. We say clerk. In private, Paula wants to know why she's sabotaging her own chances every step of the way. First, Sally fires her, then she interferes with a witness, and now this... The CCTV has been retrieved, but there are strict and fictitious rules for acquiring evidence, and now Paula is saying that she has to withdraw from the case, or Sally has to confess her actions to the court. None of this makes any sense, but it was quite good seeing Paula going rage on Sally. Later, Paula is on her way back to court and talks with Sophie, Tim and Gina. The escapades from the other day have been confessed to the judge, and Paula has managed to convince the judge to come down on their side. Somehow. Now, if you all wouldn't mind keeping the fuck away from this and let me do my job, that'd be great, says Paula.
Poor Paula.
Sally's getting a grilling from the slimiest looking lawyer in the world.
Oh God, he was awful. He was so disgusting. And he must be like the lawyer for this, well, not for the state, but for the...
Prosecution.
Yeah.
The Crown.
Right, for the Crown, because he's not Evil Duncan's lawyer. Because that would be...
Because that's Imran.
Imran. We never get to see, you know, Imran really... Or not Imran, but Duncan. Oh, because he pled guilty, so he didn't
Absolutely.
Have a...
Yeah.
Ugh.
Why should we believe you, says the slimy lawyer? Because I'm telling the truth, says Sally. Oh, well, that's fine then. The CCTV proves I'm telling the truth, she says. The lawyer can't believe they waited so long with that. How do you forget your own birthday? Or maybe Duncan got his dates wrong. That doesn't mean you weren't having an affair or conspiring, and Sally insists her innocence quite well.
It doesn't make any sense to me because the saying, oh, well, maybe Duncan got his dates wrong, has nothing to do with the fact that he claims that she was with him in a hotel room and says, I can prove it because look at the date right here. She was with me on this date. We've just proved that she wasn't with you on this date. We have proved that you've lied about this, so why should we believe you about anything else? None of this makes sense. This whole court case does not make any sense.
Sally's hardly without fault in this whole thing, though.
Well, no, but she hasn't been... They haven't caught her in a lie on the stand.
No, she hasn't provided the witness.
She hasn't provided evidence that turned out to be false. There should be enough doubt here. There should be enough doubt. even if you think there's something wrong about that woman, having proof that she was with a sick child instead of canoodling with slimy, evil Duncan should provide doubt, yes?
I don't think Paula's done a very good job here at all.
Well, she's had a hard time getting any job done. Because remember, Sally fired her for a while. So she hasn't exactly had an awful lot of time to put this case together because...
She's had months!
No, because she wasn't her lawyer for a while.
She wasn't her lawyer for about an episode.
Eh.
Johnny's given his character reference and we don't get to hear it.
No, we don't.
Gina's considering not giving evidence, but Tim says she's got to. And for reasons best known to himself, he calls her their ace in the hole. Yeah, she's an ace hole, all right.
And even Sophie is like, you know, you need, you're her sister, you should testify. It'll be good. You know, you can say all the good stuff that she's done for you.
She's her secret weapon, the best character witness they could hope for, no pressure. And then Tim says it's down to Gina whether Tim is with or without his wife for the next few years or not.
And that gives Gina pause.
Is this the only case they've got? Character witnesses and a bit of CCTV.
There should be more CCTV, like from the hotel and stuff.
Yeah, if Paula had been doing her job properly.
And Gina, if Gina hadn't smashed that phone, then that would have been evidence as well.
Gina's on the stand being questioned by Paula. Gina explains how Sally has helped her through a pretty bad time. Sally saved her. The slimy lawyer tries his best to paint Sally in a bad light and Gina does her best to answer, but in telling the truth, she has to admit that it might be possible that Sally had an affair with Duncan. It's not beyond reasonable doubt. The lawyer thinks that this means that Gina thinks Sally was definitely having an affair, and Gina responds by saying Sally was out a lot. Gina tries to rescue the situation by saying that she knows her sister better than anyone, but the lawyer manages to get her to confess that Sally has form and cheated on Kev a couple of times. Then she fucks up something about the burner phone, and in hindsight, this could all have gone a little bit better.
She went out a lot because she was the mayor and she had a lot to do, and every time she went out, it was for something important, and that whole thing was just really shabbily done, and having Gina like look down and there's this, you know, you must tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, like printed right in front of her. Is that a thing where it's printed like right in front of you while you're giving witness to remind you that, you know,
I've never given witness, so I don't know.
Yes, you have.
No, I haven't. I honestly know my life.
You have in the U.S.
We're not talking about the U.S. though.
Yeah, in the U.S. there wouldn't be anything. There isn't anything. You're just in a box right next to the judge. Of course, in the U.K. you're not in a box right next to the judge. You're facing the judge. That's different.
Yeah. I don't think that's true in all situations. You're kind of off to the side. The slimy lawyer is summing up. As he does, there's a fairly dramatic entrance from Imran, and we linger on him quite a bit.
So we think that something is going to happen, that Imran is going to save the day, but then he doesn't.
But not today.
No.
The lawyer calls Sally the purest of evil and calls for the death penalty.
He Paula does not.
Paula is now summing up. Do we believe that someone without a record, out of the blue, to pull off this fraud and nasty affair with Duncan? It's ridiculous, she says. And what about that CCTV, eh? The CCTV? And that's pretty much her argument.
It's a valid argument that, you know, she's never stolen anything. She doesn't have a record. It's a valid argument.
It's a quiet one you have to watch. Outside the court, Sophie charges at Imran, who says if it wasn't him, someone else would have represented Duncan. Again with the Imran. Something's up here. They get called in. The jury have reached a verdict. That was quick. And on all three charges, they find Sally guilty. And as each guilty verdict is delivered, Sally collapses a little bit more until she's bent over by the end. She's taken away until sentencing tomorrow, sobbing that she's innocent.
Yeah, and it's absolutely ridiculous because there's no way that they could have found her guilty beyond a shadow of a doubt. Absolutely, positively. No, CCTV. All the evidence was circumstantial. They did not have any rock-solid evidence that she did any of this.
Sally needs to go to jail so Gina can fuck Tim. Okay? Back home, Sophie says Gina is half of the reason Sally's in jail. Gina should have lied. Tim says Duncan is to blame. Sophie wants Tim to kick Gina out. She's a liability. And Tim says he can't do that. And Sophie, furious, storms out. Tim and Gina are having a solemn tea. Tim's expecting a call from Sal. He doesn't know how he's going to cope, and Gina admits that she's not sure she believes Sally about the affair. All that time, all those meetings, breaking all those rules to give the charity money away. She knows Tim has his doubts too, and then the phone rings and Tim lets it go to voicemail. In prison, a teary Sally asks Tim to pick up, but he doesn't. And now it's lock-up time, so Sally has to hang up. And that's finally Monday out of the way on that.
Ugh.
On Wednesday, in prison, Sally's having trouble coming to terms with her future. Abby's advice for sentencing is to keep her gob shut. Sally's worried that Tim didn't answer the phone, and Abby explains that for people on the outside, it's sometimes easier to take a step back. Meanwhile at home, Gina tells Tim she might have got it wrong about Sally and Duncan, but Tim says she wouldn't have said it if she wasn't sure. Wait a minute, isn't what Gina said was that she wasn't sure? Wasn't that the whole point? Tim thinks he would have spotted her having an affair, then Gina says Sally's good at hiding things. Tim says Sally loves him, and Gina asks if she's in love with him. And these characters are doing constant backflips right now.
And it's absolutely ridiculous and stupid, because Gina's like, well, maybe I was wrong about the affair. But then when Tim says Sally loves him, then she's like, yeah, but is she in love with you? So it's like, pick a lane, Gina. Pick a lane and stick to it.
Paula arrives at Speed Dial as Sophie's about to leave for court. Paula, it seems, has been ignoring Sophie's calls, and there's a reason for that. You're a total fanny, Sophie, says Paula, and you're dumped. Tim shows up at court to see Sally, but shucks away from her when she tries to hug him.
Oh, that was hard to watch.
He wants to know why she had an affair. She was found guilty, she might as well admit it. He knows because every time he closes his eyes, he sees the two of them together. She insists it never happened and begs him to believe her, but she's broken his heart, and he'll never forgive her.
Ugh.
Imran is chatting with Duncan, who seems very confident that he'll get off with a slap on the wrists. And sure enough, the judge passes sentence on Duncan. He gets off with a 2-year suspended sentence and 200 hours of unpaid community service because he pleaded guilty. Sally, on the other hand, gets a death penalty. No, 4 years. If only Sophie hadn't called him a twat. Sally's led away as Tim storms out of the court. Back in the cells, Abby's making her and Sally a truly awful-looking cup of tea. Abby says Tim is just confused, and Sally reckons Tim hates her now and doesn't trust her, which is the worst thing about this. There's gossip in the Rovers about the verdict. Kev doesn't think for a moment that Sally could be guilty. Maybe that would have been a better character witness for Sally than a manic as fuck Gina. Wouldn't you think? Kev?
Yeah, the guy that she cheated on? Yeah.
And he forgave.
Yes.
And they now have a great relationship together.
Right. Yet another business owner in town who has some clout within the community.
Yeah, maybe Kev would have been a good one. Yeah,
Kev would have been good.
Better than, say, Gina or Johnny, for that matter.
Because, well, we don't know, because we don't know what Johnny said.
I can only assume that he made a mess of it.
I don't...
They probably brought up the whole Susie thing. Sean, who's back, is keen to know if anyone thinks if she was having an affair.
And everybody says, shut the fuck up, Sean.
Yes. Tim arrives at the Rovers, suspecting everyone of gossiping. He takes his pint outside and Gina follows him while Tim's dad looks on suspiciously. At the lawyer's office, Adam's impressed that Imran got Duncan off with a suspended sentence. Imran is suspicious of how Duncan acted at the sentencing, wondering if this was the behaviour of a man coerced into a crime. Adam thinks he's overthinking it. Imran wishes he'd never taken the case on in the first place, and Adam insists that they go for a drink and throws Imran's jacket at him.
Yeah, it's weird.
A horrible jacket.
It's this weird lumberjack jacket, plaid thing, and it doesn't really go with the whole lawyer three-piece suit thing that he's wearing. And it's basically just another blazer, only it's plaid and it's a bit padded, and it looks like something a lumberjack would wear.
That's not Imran's jacket, is it?
You can't possibly. He's wearing it in the Rovers, though, so.
Oh, dear. Must have been looking elsewhere.
Eey.
Imran comes into the Rovers and is immediately accosted by an angry Tim, wanting to know why he defended Duncan when he knew he was scum. Imran says he was just doing his job. Tim says if Duncan's scum, what does that make Imran? So Tim, I guess as a taxi driver, you've never given a ride to any wrong-uns.
Right, and if you think Sally had the affair, why are you mad?
Yeah. In the street, Sophie wants to arrange a visit to see Sally, but Tim says he can do it without him. Or she can do it without him.
Yeah, he doesn't want to go.
He has no intention of going. Sophie's outraged that Tim believes Duncan over his own wife, and Gina tells Sophie to give Tim time. Gina gets a call from Sally. Gina apologises. They twisted her words. Sally talks about Tim accusing her of the affair, but Gina pretends that they haven't talked about it. Gina says, you know what Tim's like. Sally says she needs Tim more than ever. Then she hangs up. In comes Tim wanting to know if what was said, and Gina brushes all over it. And when Tim suggests maybe he should go visit after all, Gina advises against it, saying Sally's really angry with him. Tim's mad at this. He's not sure there's a way back for him and Sally, and he thanks Gina for being there for him.
And he's... Where did Gina get that from? Because that's not what Sally said.
She's making it up.
But she doesn't seem like she is. It seems like she genuinely thinks that Sally is mad at him, so maybe he shouldn't go. Because she is upset that he didn't pick up the phone. Once again, they paint Gina in such a broad, weird brush of what they think manic people are like. Later, and it's awful.
Later, Tim's sitting in his seat switching the light on and off. I guess this is meant to be moody. Gina has packed and leaves to give Tim space. It's weird her being there without Sal anyway. This is for the best. And of course,
people will talk.
Of course it's raining when she leaves, and Tim's in a thin shirt as he chases after her. They get soaked as Tim gets to her and tells her he needs her, and he leads her back into the house, and it's definitely a coming.
Ugh.
Now on to Friday. Let's see if there's any lies in this bit, shall we? Sophie has to work hard to convince Gina to go visit Sally, what with Tim refusing to go. Gina advises giving him time. Again. See, if this was a Friends episode, it'd be called the one where Gina continually tells people to give everyone time, and it wouldn't be funny.
Right, and she'd constantly be saying, they're on a break!
At the prison, that was a fantastic Ross impersonation.
Thank you!
At the prison, Gina tells Sally that Tim doesn't want to see her, and we recap quite a lot of how Sally's feeling. She asks Gina to talk to him, but Gina doesn't think that's a good idea. She says he needs time. Then she says, we all need time. And Sally looks at her like, the fuck do you mean by that? But Sally doesn't know how she fell for Duncan's lies. And this is all getting a bit repetitive. Sophie says, we all got conned. We know Sally's innocent and we'll prove it. Then Gina gives Sophie a hard time for giving Sally false hope. She thinks they need to knuckle down and accept the situation for what it is. And Sal just wants to see Tim. I need to see Tim, she says. Tim and Tim's dad are at Roy's Rolls. In comes Sophie, telling Tim to speak with Sally. But according to Gina, Sally doesn't want to speak with him.
But she just said she needs to see him and she wants to speak with him.
Yep.
Did Sophie hear her say this?
Yep.
And what does Sophie say when...
Well, we'll get there. Tim's dad, in a rare non-tip moment, rolls his eyes at this. Sophie tells Tim he's way off. Tim's dad tells Tim to phone Sally and then threatens him with a starter's pistol.
Does he... No, that's the lie, isn't it?
Nope.
The starter's pistol?
Nope, that happened.
No, it didn't. Mm-hmm.
Tim is home. He talks to Gina about his meeting with Sophie. Apparently Sally's desperate to see him, and Gina says that she didn't get that impression. So now Gina is actively trying to split them up for definite. Gina insists that Sally doesn't want to see her and suggests that Sophie is reading her situation in a certain way, while Gina is being more realistic. Tim says he needs some answers and is applying for a visiting order, and Gina looks shocked.
He's applying for a what?
Visiting order.
What's a visiting order?
An application to visit Sally in prison.
But shouldn't he be able to visit Sally in prison anyway because married?
No, you need to get consent from the prisoner, as we shall discover. Sally phones Gina to give her the good news that Tim has applied for a visiting order.
Mm-hmm.
Gina doesn't think this is a good idea, that Tim is too volatile at the moment. Sally thinks that she can settle him by telling the truth, and Gina reckons that Tim might just be wanting to tell her that he wants a divorce. All Gina wants is the best for both of them, and for what it's worth, she doesn't think that Sally should send him the visiting order. Trust me, says Gina, it's too soon. And Sally falls for it.
Why? Why would she fall for that when, you know... If Gina just said that he might want a divorce, wouldn't that make you really want to see?
Arguably, yes.
Ugh.
Unless I'm lying.
You're not lying, no, are you?
Gina appears to express something like remorse for being the utter shocker of a person she's being right now. Tim's back from wherever he was. Sal doesn't want to see him. Gina says, I hate to say I told you so. She says Sally needs...
Time.
Mm-hmm. Let Gina work on her. No chance, says Tim. He's never going back. Any shred of doubt he has is gone. And that's where we finish that story for the week.
So absolutely freaking ridiculous. It just makes me very angry. And it's such... so dumb. I really hate that.
It's a continued deconstruction of Tim's character.
Right. And it's a continued deconstruction of the one happy, well-adjusted couple living on the street. Now it's just Fizz and Tyrone, and that's getting broken up too. Nobody's allowed to be happy on this show. Happiness is not allowed by anyone.
Well, maybe we'll find some happiness in the next storyline.
Yeah, but not for very long.
Which is regarding Johnny, Jenny, and Liz.
Oh, no, that's not happy.
No, it's not. On Monday, Johnny bumps into Rita. They're both going to court to give Sally support, and Johnny is going to be a character witness. And later, Rita has done her ankle in outside the Rovers. She's fallen over, and it looks like she won't make it to court after all. Jenny helps her into the Rovers. And now with her sprained ankle, Kathy is the one who's going to be running the cabin, because Kathy needs another job. Rita will be staying at the Rovers until she's recuperated.
Not actually in the Rovers, but on the opposite side where Johnny...
through the back.
And, yeah. She's not. They're not going to prop her up in a booth and just leave her there.
Although that's where she spends most of the rest of the episode. It's quiz night at the Rovers. Ugh. Liz is gently ribbing Johnny about his DJing skills, and Jenny looks on all suspicious-like. She was all suspicious-like in an earlier scene too. And the quiz this week absolutely stinks.
Yeah, it does.
Jenny lingers over Liz's shoulder and sees her tap her PIN code into her phone. Liz lays the phone down near the sink, accidentally but not really. It gets knocked into the water.
By
Jenny.
Correct.
Liz admits it was a daft place to leave it. Jenny offers to stick it in some rice and off she goes. Then through the back, she's somehow able to get the phone working.
Which is weird because we all saw it go into the water.
Yeah. And she checks Liz's messages.
And finds nothing.
On Wednesday then, Liz arrives at the Rovers wanting to know if her phone is back to life. No, says Jenny, using lies. Jenny says she's due an upgrade, so why doesn't she take Liz's old phone with her and get them to put the SIM in her current phone? And Liz is more than happy to let her sworn enemy do this for her.
I don't feel like Liz is tech savvy enough to realise that this is a bad idea. I think she's just like, oh, a new phone out of the deal. Because obviously Jenny's old phone is better than Liz's old phone.
Now I need to take a bit of a run at this, because I'm about to do an impression of Johnny.
Oh no.
Who serves chili con carne without rice?
Me, that's who, because nobody in America eats chili with rice.
We all do now.
Well, only when you make it, because I'm too lazy to make it. But when I make it, which happens like maybe once a year, we don't have it with rice because that's just weird.
So that's what Johnny asks a befuddled Liz. They enjoy some banter that Jenny walks in on. Jenny gives Liz her old phone and says she's installed all the usual apps. Liz, again, isn't suspicious of this and sticks her phone in her bag.
And admits that she doesn't really use all of that stuff anyway, so she's not going to be... which allows us to be... to suspend our disbelief of the fact that she's not going to play around with these and find anything suspicious.
At the Rovers, we finally see what Jenny's been up to with the phones. She's got a crappy Coronation Street app on her phone called Phone Tracer, or Phone Tracker. Now, wouldn't you know it, but it shows Liz's location on a crappy-looking map. Right. Jolene is playing in the background when we see this.
Really? Was mm-hmm. it? Yep. I didn't notice that. That's a nice touch, it Coronation is, yep. Street.
Through the back in the Rovers, Johnny's already pissed off that Rita is there, hogging the TV. He asks Jenny how long she's staying, and then tells her he's off to the bistro for some me time. Sean and Evelyn are sitting all pally-like, chatting about movies, when Sally checks her crappy app again and sees that Liz, because the app has a wee picture of her, is at the bistro. Sally rushes out, leaving Sean and Evelyn to fight over who's taking over the bar, and Sean wins.
Right, because Sean actually works there, and Evelyn does not.
He doesn't work there.
He does work there.
No. He works at the Knicker Factory.
Doesn't he? Oh, no, that's right. They fired him because of the whole vodka thing mm-hmm. for his homeless friend. I forgot all about that. I thought he still worked there.
No, you corrected me on this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, now it's your turn to correct me.
Sally bursts into the bistro as Liz is getting up from her from her table. She's on her own, though she was eating with Moira earlier. Liz leaves to start a shift at the Rovers, while Sally pretends that she's there to book a table.
Jenny, Sally's in prison.
Oh, God, so yeah. And I have written Sally as well. A slightly drunk Dev and Johnny come into the Rovers.
Slightly?
Johnny and Dev didn't go to the bistro after all. They went to a bar in town. And now Jenny is relieved that he didn't go and get his hole off of Liz again.
In the bistro. Because that's where people have sex. Right there in the bistro at a table.
And that's that.
There's no more of that?
Didn't happen on Friday. Yeah.
So Jenny obviously didn't have an iPhone. Because then she wouldn't need an extra app. She could just have Find My Phone or Find My Friends.
Yeah.
And that would be a lot easier.
And nobody would have to create an app that is basically just Coronation Street with a icon of Lizzie's face in the corner of it.
And it wouldn't be weird or suspicious because those apps are on everybody's phones.
Our next story tonight is Bullied Brian.
Oh, I hate this.
Just on Monday. Just a few short scenes.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go back on Friday?
Nope.
Weird.
Brian is cycling to school wearing a bike helmet that makes him look like the Xenomorph Queen from Alien. Kathy brings him his sandwiches. Brian was up to 3 a.m. working on the play. He's going to have to work more on it at lunchtime, but Kathy thinks that he should be eating his lunch.
I don't know why that's so funny, but it is, because you're right. He totally looks like that.
Then Brian cycles off to the bottom of the street, holds out his right arm to indicate, and then turns left, and there's a wee comedy toot of a car horn. He indicates left and turns right. It's like his bike's a BMW.
Ha ha ha.
Brian arrives late to a teacher's meeting.
That's not
meeting.
As funny as the Xenomorph Queen, sorry.
I didn't say it was. Brian arrives late to a teacher's meeting that he knew nothing about. Seemingly Phil sent out the invite at 1 a.m. Phil is a dick to all the teachers, but is a particular dick to Brian, who he forces to stay behind after school to go through his shitty presentation. At school, Brian is working on the play at lunchtime. Phil continues to bully Brian. Maybe a performance review is needed if Brian is putting in all these extra hours and missing meetings. Brian promises to try harder. And Phil, passive-aggressively, threatens Brian's job and then literally steals his lunch. And once he's gone, Brian starts popping some caffeine pills. And that's all we get this week.
More pill popping.
I would expect Brian to stand up for himself a little bit more here.
Yeah, it's...
A former headmaster.
Yeah, I mean, I understand in the beginning him kind of just wanting to make a good impression and wanting to make the best impression and not wanting to rock the boat too much. But honestly, when are we going to reach a breaking point here where he tells this guy to shove it up his ass?
Brian smash? You think there's a Brian smash coming?
I think there is a Brian smash coming.
I'm looking forward to that.
He's got the head for it.
And they found a helmet his size. Our next story is Angie and Mary. On Monday, Mary and Bethany are in Roy's Rolls, and Mary is wearing a white t-shirt with a blown-up photo of Jude on it, and the words, "Find Jude," in caps underneath. Bethany goes through Mary's email folder, and Roy thinks this might be for the best. Let Jude start again. Bethany's found some emails, though.
She had her privacy messages set too high, so emails from people she doesn't know weren't getting through and were being put to junk mail.
Most of it is spam. Timeshare stuff, increase the size of Mary's bobby, that kind of thing. There is something from a guy called Darren who works with Jude and saw him a few days ago, and he's happy to meet up. Roy advises caution, but Mary is balls deep into this plan. She says yes, and then Roy shakes his head. Roy's looking after George on a bench in the street. Random fact of the week. The chippy on the street is called For Your Fries Only. Which is a strange one. If you're hell-bent on using a chip shop-related James Bond pun, surely golden fries would work better.
Maybe that's already taken.
There'll be another random fact of the week next week.
I thought we were going to name this episode For Your Fries Only.
No, because something better comes up later on.
I can't remember what that is.
You don't know what it is.
Oh, is it something that happened on Friday? I'm so excited.
Or am I lying? Along comes Angie, who can take him off his hands. Then along comes the police, who want a word with Angie. It's about your husband. Mary comes home and sees the police. They've found a body that matches Jude's description. They need to go identify it.
And we start quietly applauding in the back of our heads.
Yeah. Looking forward to seeing Jude's decomposing corpse here.
Bloated, decomposing corpse.
At the mortuary, Angie tells Mary it's not going to be pleasant and identifying a body that's been at the bottom of a canal for a couple of days, and Angie doesn't mind going on her own. It's a shame that Mary chose not to wear her Find Jude t-shirt. It could have sped things up a bit. The police call Angie in, and despite everything, despite hating Jude, despite finding Mary's behaviour recently weird to say the least, I really felt for Mary here, left alone in the mortuary waiting for her world to collapse.
Yeah, and some smashing acting there.
It was tremendous
acting. It was fantastic, you know, because she's not saying anything.
She doesn't say a word.
She's just sitting there, and yet you feel every ounce of her anguish as a mother, where there's this Schrodinger's cat situation going on. Is Jude dead? Is Jude not dead? What is Angie going to find? What is taking her so long? What's going on? And she's sitting all alone in this sterile, clanky hallway. It's just so much is going on in her face.
Yeah, she doesn't know where to look, and she goes to take a breath, and then it's like she's not sure if she can take a breath.
It was just phenomenal. She deserves all of the awards.
Just for that scene.
Yes.
Then it comes Angie. It was someone else. And Angie seems disappointed.
And so did we.
At Dev's, Angie's card is declined, and Mary has to pay for the messages. Dev is dressed like a sailor for some reason.
He likes that shirt. He wears that shirt quite a bit. Yeah, it's his French shirt.
Angie goes off to check her bank account, and oh, it's been cleaned out.
I wonder who could have done that.
Back home, Angie has been on the phone to the bank. The money was withdrawn in Runcorn. Mary is thrilled that this means that he's alive, Jude, and that if they keep it topped up, the account, with money, they'll be able to track his movements. Jude's.
And Angie's like, thanks, Mary. No, George and I don't need any money to live.
Angie, on the other hand, is upset. After everything has put her through, having to ID that body and everything, Angie never wants to see him again and wishes it was him that was in the mortuary.
Which is kind of harsh to say to his mum.
Just a little. Wednesday, at Dev's, Mary is lamenting that she bought theatre tickets for Jude's birthday. Dev suggests taking Roy or someone else. Dev tells her that Jude is gone, but he's still out there and they can still celebrate. Angie has changed the locks on the front door. Is it her house to do that?
Yes.
Is it?
I'm saying yes.
Mary is pissed that Jude might come home for his birthday and not be able to get in. Well, surely he can knock.
Seriously.
Angie wants to focus on herself and George from now on, and Jude can GTF.
Seriously.
Roy comes over to comfort Mary and offer advice, but Mary bites his head off. He doesn't have children. What does he know about anything?
Which is harsh.
Mary arrives at the bistro where Roy has organised an afternoon tea to celebrate Jude's birthday.
Which is sweet.
Mary is apologetic for earlier.
Which is kind.
Seriously. Roy pours the tea, telling Mary that he understands her need to find Jude, but he assures her that he'll come home to her sooner or later, and he needs to find his own path for now.
And he says, shall I be mother?
Then Mary gets a weird text from a number, not a name, that says, good to meet earlier, looking forward to seeing you again. Well, that's mysterious, isn't it, Helen?
It's probably this guy from the email.
The Darren guy?
Yeah. Who else could it have been?
And that's it.
Yeah. Oh, nothing happened on Friday?
Nope.
What the hell happened on Friday?
Well, nothing happened on Friday. I didn't watch it either. No, I didn't.
Well, no, you told me that
Sally
stuff happened on Friday.
So Jude's coming back, I guess.
Boo! To kill everyone. He's going to murder everybody. Blood running through the streets. I can't wait.
Our next story is the one-legged race. On Wednesday at Roy's Rolls, Kev and Jack are chatting to that Blade Runner bloke. Jack has an idea to raise money for the hospital. It's a one-legged race, whatever that is. The Blade Runner bloke is in. I wish I could remember what his name was.
You don't know what a one-legged race is?
I know what a three-legged race is. I know what a two-legged race is, but what's a one-legged race?
Isn't that kind of like a three-legged race?
No, because you need three legs for that.
Or maybe it's a one-legged race where people hop on one leg.
Well, maybe we'll find out. Let's call the Blade Runner bloke.
Oscar Pistorius?
Let's call the Blade Runner bloke Deckard. Jack intends to run two...
Oh, come on, that was funny!
...and rival sponsor. Kev is leaving Devs with Jack. It seems that none of his friends are interested in the one-legged race idea, probably because they have no idea what a one-legged race is.
And yet, and here we are, back at the... Jack is sad because his friends don't like him anymore because he lost his leg.
Kev tells him to keep his chin up and keep fighting a good fight. His fundraiser idea is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Roy's going to sponsor it.
Now on Friday.
Uh-oh.
Jack's charity one-legged race is this afternoon for some reason. He hasn't done any work on this. Tim's dad is a tit and asks Jack if he needs an announcer or a games director or out like that. Tim tells Tim's dad that all he needs is people who can hop. It's a hopping race then.
Yes,
Tim
on one leg.
And Tim's dad agree to enter. That'll be £10, please, says Jack.
£10 for this race?
£5 to enter.
Oh, okay. So £10 for the two of them. All right, okay, I got it.
The American Blade Runner bloke might be my new most annoying thing in the show at the moment. He looks no more an athlete than I do. Anyway, he's in Roy's Road with Jack and Kev, and they're talking about fitness in the race. Jack has raised £35. Jack is looking forward to the race, and Kev insists that he uses crutches in it. Jack asks Imran if he can hop, but he just donates £20 and tells Jack to go and win that race.
Aw.
It's a hopping race.
So we don't get to see Imran hop on one leg.
Well, Imran has made it after all. He thought he was busy with court work, but it's been adjourned, so he's turned up after all. Here's who's there. Sophie, Tyrone, Tim, Angie, Dev's kids, the annoying Blade Runner guy, Jack, and Kev. It's pretty shit.
Yeah, but they've raised some money.
And it's made worse by being a baton race. Dev's laid on a bit of a spread, and Tim's dad is a tit again and tries to be ringmaster for all this. The race starts, and for some reason, Dev runs on two legs in the wrong direction.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
I know.
Dev's a smart guy. He should know how to hop on one leg in the direction everybody else is hopping in one leg.
The race continues unabated. Angie is winning, but drops the baton, which is instant disqualification if we're following IAAF rules and regulations. This allows Jack to use his crutches and take the lead, but just short of the line, he's distracted when Dev calls him a cheat for using essentially three legs, and he falls and batters his stump on the ground, and Kev overreacts while Rana tends to Jack.
He shouldn't have let him use the crutches.
That was a lie.
He would have been fine. Was that the lie?
Dev didn't distract him. But he did fall and injure himself.
Yeah. I would believe that Dev would do that.
Yeah, that's why I put it in there.
It's very sneaky of you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, are you going to do your Dev impersonation?
Not tonight, I've got a tickle in my throat.
Oh, but you were able to do Johnny.
Which is why I've got a tickle in my throat.
No fair. I did my Ross impersonation.
You just said we were on a break.
Yeah, in a Ross voice.
Kev says Jack could have been seriously hurt and seems to be blaming the Blade Runner dude. He insists he wasn't in any danger, and Rana thinks it's fine, and Kev fusses, and Deckard says Kev isn't helping, but it doesn't make a difference, and off Kev goes with Jack so that the hospital can check out this grey stump, which will no doubt cost more money than Jack's raised all afternoon.
It's because Kev is jealous of the way Jack has been kind of idolizing the Blade Runner guy and wanting to do stuff with the Blade Runner guy and hang out with the Blade Runner guy. That's what it is.
I thought Kev was quite happy that all that was happening.
Oh, on Wednesday when Jack and the Blade Runner guy are kind of ragging on Kev, he had a look on his face like, I have nothing in common with my son anymore, and this guy might as well be my son's father because he only has one leg. And that's all that matters in a person's personality, apparently.
At the hospital, Jack's prosthetic has arrived and a Scottish nurse fits him out.
Nice.
He has a new leg.
Scottish nurses are the best.
Jack is over the moon as he takes his first steps. They drag it out too much. It's not that exciting. An emotional Kev remembers Jack's real first steps. And that's it for this week. So we might get back to Jack being...
not a moody tit.
He's been quite cute this week. He was funny on Friday. They told a few jokes.
Oh, good.
mostly at Kev's expense.
Good.
Our penultimate story of the night, Fizz, Tyrone and Evelyn, and this was all on Friday.
Evil Gran.
Evelyn has been up all night doing a jigsaw, would you believe? Tyrone is wearing his Los Angeles t-shirt this morning, and Evelyn berates him on his filthy overalls. In comes Fizz, angry at Hope for refusing to go into school. She was threatening to kick fuck out the teachers.
Wait, where's Hope going to school now?
Oh, she's going back to Bessie Street.
Is she allowed back in Bessie Street?
Yeah, seemingly. Fizz had no choice but to bring her home. Fizz and Tyrone ask Evelyn to look after Hope, but she's too busy with her jigsaw. Evelyn says that she'd have got Hope into school and agrees to babysit when threatened with having to pay rent. Hope is keeping Evelyn busy, but Evelyn is having none of it. Hope isn't allowed to watch TV or have a biscuit, and Evelyn tells her that she should be in school. Hope calls Evelyn mean. Evelyn says that she's a naughty girl who doesn't deserve a treat. Evelyn goes upstairs for no other reason than to get out of the room so Hope can say, "Fuck you, Gran," throw the jigsaw on the floor and grab a biscuit anyway.
Well done, Hope.
Evelyn's at the cabin with Ruby and Hope. Ruby gets some chocolates and a treat for getting 10 out of 10 in some test or whatever, and being Nana's favourite. Hope is a little shit, on the other hand, and gets nothing. Rita tries to smooth it over by offering another doll for a discount, but Evelyn isn't having it.
This is very triggering for me.
At home, Fizz is telling Tyrone that Hope's behaviour is deteriorating and that school is recommending therapy. The house is quiet. Maybe that's a good sign. Do you think that's a good sign, Helen?
No.
No, it's not a good sign because Evelyn has Hope's face pressed up against the wall, telling her that if she moves a muscle, she'll be in for it. And I believe Evelyn calls Hope a wicked cow.
She calls a child a wicked cow.
Whilst pushing her face into a wall.
Why is she pushing her face into a wall?
Well, Hope is whimpering, and in comes Fizz and Tyrone demanding to know what's going on. Hope has ruined Evelyn's jigsaw and ripped the head off Ruby's new doll. So she must have her face pushed into a wall. Because wall rhymes with doll.
I guess so.
Hope says it was an accident and calls Evelyn a nasty old bastard. Oh no, a nasty old bat, and then refuses to apologise. Tyrone sends the girls to the rooms and asks Evelyn to step outside to let the dust settle. Fizz looks traumatised. Fizz is appalled at Hope's behaviour and Evelyn's reaction. Ty stands up for Evelyn, and Fizz doesn't think this is working out and wants Gran to move out. It's not just Hope she's a bitch with. She's a bitch to Fizz too. And Tyrone says it'll have a word.
Evil Gran must go.
At the Rovers, Tyrone finds his Gran. She thinks that he's there to apologise. She also thinks that Fizz is a stupid name for someone called Fiona. Tyrone could do so much better. Tyrone says that he was sticking up for Evelyn before, but now it's too late. There's no twisting his arm anymore. And Evelyn thinks Fizz has had it in for her from the start, and she doesn't stay where she's not wanted. She'll no doubt end up on a park bench somewhere. Of course, there's an alternative, she says. Chuck Fizz out and find a nicer young lady who hasn't spawned a devil child. And Tyrone is outraged. Fizz is a great mum. Well, we'll have to agree to differ, says Evelyn.
Fiona is the name of a baby hippopotamus. On the YouTubes, and... That's the only other Fiona I know. Well, except for, you know, on Shrek.
You know no one called Fiona?
Besides the princess on Shrek and Fizz and Fiona the hippopotamus? That's correct. Do you know anybody else named Fiona?
No, lots of people called Fiona.
Not a very common name here.
I have many friends on Facebook called Fiona.
Really?
Yeah. Fiona Steadman, Fiona Stark, Fiona Davey.
They're all British.
They're all Scottish.
Yeah. See, here we go.
Evelyn is home, pissed on the wine and pissed off. Tyrone has told Evelyn to find a new place to live, but he gives her some time. Some place that's dog friendly. Evelyn and Fizz exchanged barbs while Fizz and Tyrone argue about separating Evelyn from Cerberus. And that's as far as we get with that this week.
Oh, so they may keep Cerberus? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, there was a little bit where Fizz is worried that if we're waiting for Evelyn to find some place that takes dogs, we'll be waiting a while.
Yeah. Besides, it's not the dog's fault that Evil Gran is so evil and pushes children's faces into walls and buys nice toys for one child while not buying anything for the other child. My grandmother used to do that.
Yeah, that's not a nice thing to do.
It's not.
This is the best thing about being an only child.
It's the only child of an only child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
our final story for tonight. Babies on the Brain.
Oh, God. I hate it so much. Make it go away.
You missed the worst part of it.
Oh.
Friday was just appalling.
I'm so glad I missed it.
So let's get through this quite quickly, shall we?
Oh, please.
On Monday, Kate bumps into Rana, who has some good, if somewhat dubious, news. Her divorce is through. Huzzah! Kate has some news of her own. The fertility clinic want $3,500 for the first cycle. Later, Kate grabs Johnny and asks him for the $3,500, and Johnny's excited for her but can't find that sort of cash so quickly. Rita has managed to shuffle into the Rovers and contrives a way to start talking about regrets and not having kids, and the camera slowly pans across an expressionless Liz, Jenny and Johnny. And of course, we all know why Rita is saying this, don't we, Johnny?
Mm-hmm. It's very contrived. It's very contrived and all, but I can kind of see, because Rita first starts talking about the fact that so many people on the street seem to be her children. She treats them as her children. And then, it's such a wee shame I didn't have any children of my own. Mind you, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, all right, Rita, you've served your purpose. You can wind it back in now, please.
Shuffle back to the back room.
No, she needs yet another vodka tonic. That's what she needs.
In the Rovers, Rana wants to plan the wedding, but Kate doesn't think they can afford that with the baby.
Which made me so angry. Because that's the whole thing that got the whole baby talk started, is the fact that they're engaged now, they're going to get married, they'll have a stable home in which to bring a baby, and now Kate wants to backtrack on the whole reason why she started talking about babies in the first place. They just got engaged. Why can't they just be happy to be engaged and get married before they have this stupid baby? What is going on here? It doesn't make any sense.
Over comes Johnny and offers up the money. Kate is thrilled, Rana markedly less so. Kate tells Johnny that he saved their lives.
And Rana does not look like her life has been saved.
No. On Wednesday at the bistro, Kate asks Robert for the day off. She got a cancellation at the fertility clinic, and surely Ryan would like the shift. Robert is agreeable to this. Robert's about to admit to Kate that he has baby fever too, when Michelle comes in, and then Robert lies to Michelle when she asks why Kate wants the day off.
Right, which was weird.
Johnny is over at the bistro borrowing a bottle of wine for some reason, but the real reason he's there is so he can tell Michelle the real reason why Kate has a day off. Johnny leaves as Robert comes in, and rather than say something to him, Michelle has checked the bookings and insists to take the afternoon off.
Right.
A Scottish doctor is telling Kate and Rana all about the fertility stuff, but it seems that they haven't even got round to talking about which one of them is intended to carry the baby.
I mean, I remember when this whole baby thing first started, people were joking that they could try at the same time and do who's going to get pregnant first sort of thing. But yeah, it doesn't seem like they've really put very much thought into this at all.
No, and Rana is in a hurry to leave. Outside in the hall, they giggle about being stupid beyond belief, and then they decide that Kate's probably the best place to carry this hypothetical child, because Rana doesn't want to have a baby at all, but Kate is too over-the-top happy to notice. Kate and Rana are filling Johnny in. He's thrilled that she's going to be the mother. Kate thought that this would be the case, and with her best shit-eaten grins, they hug, while Rana looks like she's actually eating shit. Robert and Michelle bump into Kate and Rana at the Rovers. Kate asks if he told Michelle, and he says he didn't think it was his place, so she explains to Michelle about the fertility stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Robert goes to the bar and looks over his shoulder at Kate and Rana. At their table, Michelle wonders if the baby talk has made them all broody again, but he insists not. And now Kate and Rana are talking with Adam and Imran about the baby stuff. Adam thinks that she should get pregnant the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, because...
sounded like he was offering.
Yeah, because that's what lesbians like to do. They like to sleep with men.
And Kate has to admit that Steve has some strong swimmers.
Ah, that just makes everybody at the table feel sick.
Imran asks about the baby's ethnic origin, and Adam mentions that they probably want it to look like part of the family. But this is yet another thing that Kate and Rana haven't discussed. Rana downs her wine in a rush, and she and Kate leave. At home, Kate is rattling on at 100 miles an hour about baby stuff when Rana finally admits that she's not sure about this. Things are going too fast. She doesn't want a total stranger being the child's father, because Kate would be the mother, the stranger would be the father, and Rana would be nothing. It's not right for Rana. It's not right for them.
Right. And it's nice that she's finally spoken up, but it's really not 100% the truth here that she's presenting. And it's such a roundabout way to slow this down. What she really should be saying is, look, I really don't want to have a kid right now. I'd rather get married first, if it's all right with you, because my mom already hates me. Don't you think she'll hate me even more if I have a child out of wedlock before getting married to you and raise a child who doesn't look like me, who's not blood by me, and everything else? I mean, there's so, on so many levels, this is so wrong and stupid.
Do you think that situation's going to get better or worse on Friday?
Worse.
Kate is annoyed at Toast. But not really. Kate agrees that Stranger Daddy is off the shelf and the wedding planning is back on. They discuss honeymoon venues.
Oh, thank God.
Scotland, Yorkshire, or Thailand. Kate agrees to be patient.
Not Florida.
And then her toast's burnt.
Aw.
Rana, who doesn't work at the law office, is at the law office, filling in Imran on the baby stuff. Imran is suspicious that Kate has just stalled all her plans just like that. Rana thinks they're good and in love, and it'll all be fine. Then Imran pulls an apple-based Muppet face.
An apple-based Muppet face?
Rana wants Imran to eat an apple, and Imran doesn't want to eat that apple, so he pulls a Muppet face.
Is she trying to stuff an apple in his mouth?
Essentially.
This is a lie, isn't it?
No, she's quite keen on him eating an apple. Kirk's at the medical centre. Beth spotted a rash on his back during No Gym Jams night the other night. Guess what our episode is called?
No Gym Jams night.
He's about to take his top off in the middle of the medical centre when Rana ushers him to a treatment room. Then Kate, who doesn't work at the medical centre, comes into the medical centre and interrupts Rana and Kirk and starts harping on about adoption and getting the ball rolling right now.
What? What? Because that baby's not going to look like anybody.
Rana tells her to drop it and goes off with Kirk to look at his back rash. Kate, perhaps unsurprisingly, can't seem to understand Rana's reaction.
And, I mean, Kate, take a hint. When Kirk's back rash is more interesting than what you're saying, maybe it's time for you to take a step back and reevaluate your life.
In the treatment room, Kirk is about to take his top off again and give us all a good look at his back rash when, unbelievably, guess what happens?
Kate barges in again.
Mm-hmm. Kate, who doesn't have a back rash or need for the treatment room, bursts into the treatment room, refusing to leave it like this.
Aren't there, like, HEPA laws in the UK that would keep somebody out of a treatment room who doesn't belong in a treatment room?
You would certainly think so. This is even worse than the factory breach. Rana quite rightly points out that she's working, but Kate demands to talk about it right now. Oh, can you not give it a fucking rest for a minute, says Rana. I've done nothing but listen to your baby fever for weeks. I'm sick of it. Now sling your hook. So Kate storms off, slamming the door. Yeah. Kind of beginning to hate Kate a little bit again.
Ugh, she's always been selfish. She's continuing to be selfish.
At the bistro, Kate is rushed off her feet. She has too many things to do, so rather than do them, she starts stealing wine.
What?
Later, Kate has continued to drink Robert's profits and is now drunk. When Robert gives her some instructions, she tells him to chill, and he notices that she's pissed as a fart and sends her to the kitchen, which she does reluctantly, but grabs a bottle on her way.
What?
Now in the kitchen, Kate is pretty mortal, and when Robert comes in, he threatens to fire her. Fine, do it, she says. She doesn't care about anything anymore now that she's not going to get her own way about something, and she slumps to the floor and starts to cry. Kate and Robert are chatting. Kate singularly refuses to see anything from Rana's point of view, even when Robert points it out to her. She starts bleating on about Susie and how lovely she is and how she'll always be in Susie's life, but it's not the same. Well, Robert feels the same way, and considering it was just the two of them working today, they sure take their sweet time chatting in the kitchen. When Robert explains that Michelle doesn't want any more kids and he's ran out of time, Kate, who has sobered up rather sharpishly, offers that he fathers a kid with Kate and Rana.
Or just basically with Kate.
By means of a test tube rather than the bobby. Robert thinks this is the stupidest idea he's ever heard of. He wants to be a dad, but with Michelle. It's a recipe for disaster. Kate says all three of them could raise a baby, and it's a really cool idea, she says. Robert says Michelle would hit the roof and points out that she's asking him to go from nothing to co-parenting with a gay couple faster than a bullet train. Then in comes Bethany, ready for her shift. Robert sends Kate home to sober up. Things have quietened down at the bistro, and Michelle comes in with Ryan, who has passed his food hygiene whatever. I wasn't paying attention. Robert laments that he'll never get to feel the pride that Michelle feels in her son. He's just happy that the entrance fee wasn't a waste. He feels he's left out. She's the parent, he's not. She calls him Broody again. He wants to talk some more, but she doesn't think she'll change her mind.
Isn't he allowed to be proud of Ryan? He's allowed to be proud of Ryan. There's nothing stopping him from being proud of Ryan.
But he isn't.
He's not proud of Ryan for passing this stupid test?
No, he's happy that he didn't waste money on it.
Well, that's his own hang-up. That has nothing to do with not being a dad. You're proud of the kids when they do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not Robert, though.
No, you're better than Robert.
Finally. 29 episodes in, finally. Later, Michelle is sorry for being so direct. She wishes Robert had mentioned this at the start, and she wants to channel her energy into the two kids she's got and her relationship with Robert, plus Rory. There's that Rory thing. She's not really over the Rory thing. Robert doesn't think it's fair that she has the final say, and she feels that he's pushing it. He says if her mind's made up, then so is his, whatever that means.
It's not fair that the woman who's going to be carrying this child that you want has the final say about this child that you want.
I may be paraphrasing that a little bit. Kate is at the Rovers drinking coffee. Johnny doesn't think there's a rush, whatever makes her happy. Kate seems to think that Rana doesn't object to being a mum. It's the mechanics of it that's given her pause, which makes me wonder if Kate got a different script.
Yeah, she did.
Kate's back at the flat and it's Rana who apologises first to Kate. Rana says quite clearly that she's not ruling anything out, she just doesn't want anything yet.
And she wants to get married first, yes?
Kate finally agrees to put it on the back burner for now, except I suspect that she doesn't.
Yeah.
And then Rana goes off to get some pizza and Robert appears at Kate's. Robert seems to have warmed to the idea of getting Kate knocked up. He's thought it through, he hasn't told Michelle yet, but he thinks it might be a brilliant idea, they should look into it. Kate agrees, but should keep it between the two of them.
Ugh.
Mum's the word, says Robert.
Mum's the word. Really? Did he really say that? Uh-huh. Oh, for Pete's sake.
And that is the end of this week's episode.
I am so glad I missed Friday.
When you came in and you actually had time to sit and watch both episodes, I was like, this so isn't worth your while. This isn't worth your while.
Yay.
You can spend 44 minutes doing something a bit more useful.
Yeah, like defragging from cutting out hideous gingerbread men and sewing bulbous noses on cardboard reindeer.
Moment of the week.
Oh yes, Mary sitting waiting to hear whether or not Jude is dead.
What a great moment that was.
That was a good moment.
So that is our
Moment of the week.
Moment of the week.
The boring of the week of the moment.
Well, I wasn't here for it because it happened on Friday, but Ryan coming in and talking about the fact that he passed the stupid test.
That was quite boring. That can't be the most boring thing that happened this week.
I think it is. I think it is.
Oh, fuck it. That's our
boring moment of the week.
Okay, it is getting towards a quarter before midnight. Shall we get out of here?
Yeah, we're getting out of here a little early.
Yeah. There is a little sliver of space on Gmail servers reserved for mail to us, so you might as well use it. Send your words, murmurings, joy, panic, and cake to thetalkofthestreet@gmail.com. Alternatively, there's always @CoreyPodcast on Twitter and Facebook. And if you're more of a blog person, and you do look like a bit of a blog person, thetalkofthestreetpodcast.wordpress.com is the one for you. Thanks if you're a new listener, and thanks for making it to the end of another episode.
And please like and subscribe on the iTunes, and tell iTunes how much you love us. Also, Gav's book is available on Amazon. It's called The Scottish Book of the Dead by Gavin Broom. Go buy it. Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
We'll be back next week with more Talk of the Street.
Bye!
Cheerio!